Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode number 102 of the Necessary Roughness Podcast, presented by Last Word on Sports. I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic. I hope you all are doing well. Hope you all had a sensational Super Bowl weekend, although TBH, it was, the game did not live up, but this happens from year to year. You never know, you know. It's, like, when we talked about it last week, I compared it to the Rams-Patriots Super Bowl, and I hoped this one would live up to the hype. It's another hyped Super Bowl that just doesn't live up. It's the same as, you know, Denver and Carolina. Denver-Carolina wasn't that bad. I'm thinking of Denver-Seattle. Didn't live up. So we've got a couple of stinkers in here. You know, for a while we were on a hot streak, and it was an interesting game-ish, but By the second half, it was, you know, you think that the Chiefs can always come back, and we'll talk about that, obviously, as we jump into the standout seven. That's obviously number one. That Super Bowl, though. Anyway, you tend to think the Chiefs always have a chance to come back. They're always in the game, but what it came down to is, quite honestly, they just didn't have their starting tackles. And, you know, we didn't go in as in-depth into the Super Bowl last week as we probably wanted to in terms of prediction and pick 'em. The thing is, well, we predicted the game, we gave our reasoning, but the thing is, we didn't put as much emphasis on the tackles as we probably should have. We figured that, you know, everybody loves Eric Bieniemy and lauds him, and everybody loves Andy Reid and lauds him, and Andy Reid might be a future Hall of Famer, I'm not sure. This would have iced it, probably, two rings, plus all the championship game appearances and yada, yada, yada. Reinventing himself with a new team and such. However, you know, they just clearly didn't really expect the amount of pressure that they were running into. Shaq Barrett, who we discussed last year in our Defensive Player of the Year race, one of the better pass rushers in the league. I thought he might have been a fluke after last year, I'm not going to lie to you, but he came back this year and had a good year too. You talk about JPP, he's still got some left in the tank, even though the Giants moved on much earlier than they probably needed to, but that's okay. You know, he's a little gruntled, to say the least. It's a good job by Todd Bowles, and it's one of those things that comes in, and we discussed ad nauseum, you know, well, Steve Spagnuolo, and I lauded him, and I still think Steve Spagnuolo should get a fair shake one of these years for one of the head coaching vacancies that will inevitably occur. But what it comes down to is, you know, Todd Bowles was a great DC pre-being the Jets coach, and he's still a pretty darn good DC. And they went out there and they just kind of bullied the Kansas City Chiefs, the team that usually is the bully on the block. Tom Brady wins MVP. Did Tom play a fantastic game by Tom standards? No, but he played a pretty adequate one. You know, Lenny Fournette, 89 yards and a touch, 60 yards out of Rojo, two touchdowns from Gronk. You knew eventually Gronk was going to make an impact. I mean, Mike Evans has one catch, but the biggest plays involving Mike Evans were pass interferences. And we can't go past this Kansas City fan without discussing it. I know you know what I'm talking about. We've got some comments from some NFL players during the game. Darius Leonard, wow, it's getting obvious, you know, in regards to what he believes was some lackluster officiating, some uneven officiating, if you will, in this game. And I'm not going to lie to you, it seemed like at the least there should have been one of these pass interferences that were called uncatchable. Therefore, you know, it would shift to a defensive hold, which is a big difference. You know, you have the play at the tail end of the first half, obviously, which pushes them down the field, down to the 1 yard line on a ball that looked like it was going to hit the out of the end zone wall. And look, I get it. Mike Evans is a big dude in the athleticism and yada yada. Mike Evans ended this game with one catch. So for as much as, you know, I love Mike Evans, we talked about how, you know, being a New Yorker, I remember the team drafting Odell Beckham when I was like, Mike Evans, he could be the next Calvin Johnson. Look at him. You know what I mean? And he's had a great career. He's not Calvin Johnson. He's had a great career, though. But I don't think that ball in the end zone was catchable. I think you could make an argument for the one up the sideline. Moreover, there was less contact on the one up the sideline, which was a huge penalty, on top of the fact that they just kept shooting themselves in the foot. Chris Jones gets an unsportsmanlike for pushing someone back. It's the Super Bowl. And look, I get it. You know, you're trying to keep it from getting chippy. But it's the first quarter of the Super Bowl, and you're calling that penalty. Or I don't know if they called it unnecessary roughness. I forget. It was a 15-yard penalty. And it really helped jumpstart that drive. And look, looking at the way that Tampa Bay played this game from a defensive standpoint, they didn't need any help. And look, I'm not going to sit here and say the Chiefs are blameless. I think that there's a good amount of these that they just weren't ready. You know what I mean? Whether that be on the coaching staff, whether that be on the fact they thought they, you know, they were the big kid on the block, and well, not so much. But, I mean, you look at the fact that Chris Godwin has 9 yards in this game, Antonio Brown has 22, Mike Evans has 31. If I read you this stat line, you'd think that the Chiefs blew them out. You would not think that this was a close game. And well, it wasn't, but you'd be in the wrong direction. You know, and the fact of the matter is, on the offensive side of the ball for the Chiefs, they could not protect Patrick Mahomes, and they did not have a plan. They did not really feature any running game much in the first half, a la, Buffalo Bills against the Ravens, and I do not understand that. And we've seen it in the past over and over and over again, coordinators or whoever's calling the plays for them falls in love with passing the ball. It's not unheard of. It's normal, I guess, especially when you have an elite quarterback, an elite tight end, an elite threat in Tyreek Hill. But at the end of the day, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is no schlub. Darrell Williams is no schlub. And you are facing a team, look, I get it, their front seven is good. It's the best part of their defense. But to completely get rid of the running game, you are crippling yourself. You are cutting off your nose to spite your face. Because when it comes down to it, if they can really just bear down on rushing the passer even more, they didn't have to respect the running game this entire game. Look at the stats at the end. They don't tell the story. Clyde Edwards-Helaire ends with 9 carries for 64, but none of those carries were very consequential. I don't know. It's one of those things where I don't know how to explain it. You know what I mean? In the second half, he had that one big carry, and it looked like they were going down, not to mention the lack of aggressiveness from Kansas City, and some of that on their offense was forced by the pass rush of Tampa Bay. I understand that. Trust me, I'm not stupid. But what I'm talking about more specifically in terms of lack of aggressiveness is not on the play calling front, although there was some of that there, I guess you could argue. What I'm referring to more so is the fact that they're taking field goals out of halftime in a game where you're down. This is the Super Bowl. You're down 21-6. And you're taking a field goal on this drive. You know how much momentum you could get? You know how much fire you could drum up in your team? I don't have to tell Andy Reid. He's been around the game longer than I've been alive. He's seen it. He knows. And it's bizarre to me that they're taking a field goal there. Oh, we'll take a field goal here. You know, like, I get it. You don't want to be over-aggressive, and that's something that their play calling can be. They like shot plays, and sometimes they can take too many shots. And I think that's one of the things that we saw that kind of hindered them early in the game, where Tyreek Hill ends this game with 7 catches for 73, but the plays they draw up for him, they're all long developing routes and they're all deep shots. But we had this discussion when Odell Beckham was a Giant. We've had this discussion with other star receivers. You got to have a way to get the ball in his hands and just let him run. The guy's so elusive, and Tyreek Hill, more than any of those other players, he might be one of the most elusive players in the NFL. You know, he's Christian McCaffrey when he has the ball. It's kind of bizarre to me that there's not a screen drawn up in there. There's not one of these, one of those, you know what I mean? And I get the RPO shtick, and you know, maybe it's on Patrick for peeing more than he should have R'd, as odd as that sounds, passing in an RPO rather than allowing for the run. And we saw some Patrick Mahomes scrambles, which were their best plays in the first half. Patrick Mahomes, obviously, after the game, having surgery on his toe to heal the turf toe thing that he had, a little turf toe injury. I don't know. It's kind of bizarre to me what we saw out of this Chiefs team. And I think a lot of the credit, rightfully so, goes to Todd Bowles and goes to Bruce Arians and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I don't think anything crazy came out of Byron Leftwich's offense. I don't think anything crazy came out of anything Arians drew up offensively. I think it was just a matter of no starting tackles, let's just bully them, and if they're not going to run the ball, we're going to pin our ears back, and that's just the way it's going to be. You know what I mean? They can't do anything to stop us. We're just going to do what we want all game long, and I think Andy Reid and the Chiefs coaching staff deserves a bashing here. You know what I mean? I don't think they've gotten as much of a bashing as they probably could have, if I'm being completely honest with you, brutally honest. That being said, we talked about the refs a little bit, and I do think some of these calls were, you know, a little bit more ticky-tack than I expected. We saw it at the halftime show, Nate Burleson and Boomer Esiason alluding to the fact that it's the Super Bowl. You kind of don't want to be the one that decides it. And in the first half, I would say that the penalties, though I would put some of the blame for them on the Chiefs themselves, obviously, the penalties certainly played a role. I mean, it's the most penalized team ever in the first half, and it just so happens that I'm not going to be that guy, although you know I want to be. It just so happens that it's against Tom Brady, the golden boy, you know what I mean? In a year where there's no attendance, there's no this, there's no that, you know, it kind of helps if you get it a little bit. Although, from everything I have heard, and I have been keeping my ear to the ground, so to speak, and reading about, this was the lowest rated Super Bowl in quite some time. And in terms of television watches, it's one of the lowest, period with a T at the end, if you will. It was bad, and that's not to blame the matchup. It might just be Brady fatigue. You know, this is similar to last year's NBA Finals. Oh, it's LeBron, look at that. And from a corporate perspective, you're thinking, all right, well, it's our star. It's the biggest star in the sport. It's got to help the way it's going to be watched. It's got to help the sales. But at the end of the day, you get fatigue of watching the same star over and over and over. And, you know, you want your team to have a chance. And that's one of the things that you could argue benefited the NBA from him, from LeBron James going to the Western Conference for the first time in his career when he joined the Lakers. However, we then see, you know, I mean, the Raptors making it, obviously that was fantastic. But then you see the Heat making it again. And it's like, all right, well, that market has already been, not saturated, but placated to, you know, and obviously, I'm not claiming that they rig these things, but if you're looking at it in a vacuum, you'd probably want it to be, you know, they were probably rooting for a rematch of Super Bowl I, potentially. You know what I mean? You love the storyline between Mahomes and Brady, but Mahomes and Rodgers might have hit a little bit different. It might have piqued people's interest, considering Rodgers hasn't been able to make it back in so long and things like that. I don't know. I wanted to go through this without ripping the refs, and I tried my best. I hope you guys understand that watching the game, having picked the Chiefs, and, you know, I'm not really rooting per se, but rooting for myself to be right, because everybody wants to be right. You see some of these penalties, and you're like, come on now. You know, when the guy, the DB running up the sideline, puts his hand on the small of Mike Evans' back, and he collapses. Pass interference is about a 30-yard penalty, I believe, if not more. Come on. You know, the uncatchable, the one that really got me is the one in the end zone with Mike Evans and Tyrann Mathieu. I believe it was Mathieu, and it just looked completely uncatchable to me. And that changes the entire complexion of that, because it's, look, I get it, defensive holding there, but you have more ground to defend then. You put them right at the 1-yard line with 10 seconds left, and you just know they're getting in. You just know. And you know at that point that unless Mahomes comes out and makes something big out of halftime, this game is over. And that's why I thought it was kind of shocking that Andy Reid would kick the field goal out of halftime, because the game was slipping away tremendously. You know what? And I get it. If you go for it and you don't get it, you've lost all momentum. Your team will lose full composure. You're not getting anything out of this. It's over, right? But for all intents and purposes, down 21-9, you're pushing towards that anyway, you know? You really are. And, you know, closing thoughts in regards to the Super Bowl. A great matchup, didn't live up to its hype. It's happened before. We have some of the stats, obviously, you know. Patrick Mahomes, 9 losses in his career. The kid's not going anywhere. First time he's ever lost by more than 2 scores. He said afterwards they got beat bad. That's the worst he's ever lost a game. I don't know. Then you have the stat that everyone's heard that he ran, what was it, 497 yards from scrambling around. I mean, it's ridiculous the amount of scrambling he was doing. The throws that he was making. You have the throw early in the first half where he's on the run and he hits Tyreek Hill right in the face. I don't blame Tyreek for dropping it, though it would have been a legendary play if he made the catch. And he is one to usually make the tough grabs, I would argue. You have Travis Kelce drop a big ball on 3rd down in that first half. You have, I believe it was Darrell Williams. Sorry if it wasn't. But on the what would have been probably the most impressive play I've seen from someone not named David Tyree, you have Patrick Mahomes scrambling, and diving and throwing simultaneously. and throwing, you know, not a perfect spiral, but a dot, which went on to hit Darrell Williams in the face mask. Oh my goodness, someone at home was definitely, well, more than someone, quite a few million someones were screaming, "Oh my God, how did you not catch that ball?" Now, I'm not saying I could catch that. I'm arguing the majority of the population does not catch that, including Darrell Williams. But it would have been one of the best plays I've ever seen in my life. The throw is still one of the most impressive throws I've ever seen. We're not going to dive in, and this is moderately related, obviously, as it ties into the game. We're not going to dive into the Tom Brady, Tyrann Mathieu argument. What I will say is this. It was mutual, and there was only one flag thrown. And that's one of the things that I think aggravated people in the first half, including that Darius Leonard quote we talked about with them making it obvious. It's one of those things where you're looking at a situation where it's mutual, similar to the Chris Jones situation. He's pushed by the center, Jensen. He pushes Jensen back. You throw one flag. And we've been taught for years, we've been programmed to hear, the one that retaliates is the one that gets blamed. But why? Like, the referee, you can see him watching the situation play out, and it's not like he took Chris Jones to the ground and went full Miles Garrett on him. He just pushed the guy. Why don't you just, in the Super Bowl, mind you, why don't you just get between them and say, "Hey, guys, let's break it up, you know, let's play a clean game here. It's the Super Bowl. No, we're going to throw the flag here. We're going to help facilitate a Tampa Bay touchdown drive," which, look, they might have scored anyway. They played pretty darn well offensively. You know what I mean? But the penalty helps facilitate. Look, you can bash Chris Jones all you want, but heat of the moment, we see that constantly with no flag getting thrown, and this is the Super Bowl. This is the biggest game of the season for the entirety of the sport. You know what I mean? It's just the way it is. Like I said, the Mathieu thing, and then he said something I won't repeat, and then you have Tom Brady texting him to apologize, and they're trying to insinuate perhaps what it might have been. I'm not going to delve into that. We try to stay out of stuff like that on this show. You know, you can get enough of that elsewhere. I'm just here to talk about the football for the most part. We can talk about a little bit off the field, but I'm going to draw the line there. I'm not going to try and guess what profanity Tom Brady was using. Tom Brady, it is what it is. You know, I said closing points quite a few minutes ago, but the real closing point is this just kind of adds on to the Tom Brady legacy. Clearly the guy is the greatest of all time, you know, and for somebody, like I said, grew up in New York, you don't exactly root for Tom Brady, but I can certainly respect him, and there's no question in my mind that Tom Brady has done pretty much everything you can do as a quarterback, and he's just playing because he can at this point. You know what I mean? He's playing because he loves football, and he just feels like it. He just feels like winning. He feels like he's still got some in the tank, and why not make a whole, I mean, $28 million? You know, he played better than majority of the quarterbacks in the NFL. He's on a darn good team. He's doing something he hasn't done before in a new team and things like that. Home Super Bowl, we're not going to talk about the shenanigans of it. I think home Super Bowl is definitely shenanigans. I'm not going to say they should have an alternate site. We discussed this years ago when the Super Bowl was in Minnesota, I believe. If you care enough to, which you might, dig through the catalog a little bit. It's definitely in there. Personally, I don't care enough to dig through it. I just think it's a little shenanigans. Either way, that'll bring us to the end of our Super Bowl talk. That'll bring us to the end of all the talk we've had of the 2020 season. I hope you guys, you know, enjoyed the season. It was a fun one. We're not wrapping up the show. We still got a little bit more to do, obviously. But we're done here. It was a fun year. It was the pandemic season. We're hoping by the time the 21 season starts, which would be, you know, OTAs and everything in the summer, potentially preseason games in August, it would be nice for it to not be another COVID season. It'd be nice to start having more fans in the stands. It'd be nice to potentially even have those preseason games, you know what I mean? But all we can do now is hope, and realistically, that's it. So let's move on. Let's start doing what we're going to do in the offseason. You know it's going to be a lot of prognostication, a lot of quarterback talk, which who minds? But we're going to start with number two. We're going to go Watt, and Watt. We're going to talk about first J.J. Watt demanding a release from the Texans organization and then being granted that release, which is to some people the shocking part. I mean, you can demand whatever you want, but the organization doesn't necessarily have to adhere to that, and it seemed the Texans were more than willing to grant, you know, arguably the best player in their franchise history, at least on the defensive side, the release that he wanted. As of right now, from Sports Betting Dime, Lord knows which, I don't even know, but it's the only odds I've found at the moment. The odds leaders to sign J.J. Watt, the leader is Pittsburgh, plus 175 for Pittsburgh. His brother plays there. It makes sense. I could see it happening. Number two is Tampa Bay. I don't really get how Tampa Bay wound up on this list, but I guess it would be appealing for a guy that's never played in a Super Bowl to go play with Tom Brady. I can't blame him. Pitt at plus 175, Tampa Bay at plus 200. Third at plus 550, Green Bay, obviously. J.J. Watt, a Wisconsin product, went to the University of Wisconsin. Wouldn't be shocking to see him over there. It would be a great get for them. Number four, plus 650, Baltimore. Once again, it would be a great get for Baltimore. I don't know if I necessarily see it happening, but if they can steal him away from Pittsburgh, which might be why they're on this list and why they might be bidding for him, it makes sense to me. Then we have four other teams from between plus 1,100 and plus 1,500. The Rams, Dallas, Cleveland, and Miami. I don't realistically see Miami being in on this, but I guess they have money to blow, so they might as well. I'm unsure. Dallas, who's in on everyone. They love to put Dallas in for everyone who's ever a free agent. Cleveland, an interesting one, but again, I don't really know if I see that one. And the Rams, who, I mean, if you could pair J.J. Watt with Aaron Donald, you do it. So I can understand why they're in on this. Personally, I can see him fitting a lot of places. I do think Pittsburgh might be where he winds up going. He seems to be relatively close with his brothers, to be completely honest. And I think playing with your brother in the NFL, I mean, I'm an only child, I wouldn't know. Obviously never been in the NFL either, so I don't meet either parts of this discussion. But playing with your brother in the NFL is something that's really hasn't been accomplished by many, especially people that are as big a name as JJ. JJ is so close with his brother. Obviously, we saw him on Twitter trying to argue a little bit against the decision to give Aaron Donald the Defensive Player of the Year. Congratulations to all the award winners, by the way. Just as an aside, this is the first year, I think, we were right on every award. Now, in my opinion, that takes the fun out of it. Obviously, I love being right. Everybody loves being right. But, you know, when there's a clear-cut MVP, a clear-cut, relatively, offensive player of the year, a clear-cut person that's going to win defensive player of the year, along with, in my opinion, a clear-cut offensive rookie of the year, even with Justin Jefferson being as good as he was, it had to go to the quarterback just the way they vote on these awards. You know, add that to a clear-cut comeback player of the year, a clear-cut defensive rookie of the year in terms of hype and talent level, clear-cut coach of the year. It's just not as much fun, in my opinion, as it probably could have been. That's not the league's fault. That's not the writer's fault. But, you know, moving forward, I think it'll be more interesting. We probably don't end up in a situation like this a second year in a row. I don't think we've ever been right on all the awards, and I don't think we'll ever be right on all the awards again. So, had to toot our horn when we had the chance, but had to get that in there. Either way, I can see JJ landing with any of these teams. I think it's very interesting that they just cut bait on him. Hence the what? So we go what to what? And let's talk about Deshaun Watson. Supposedly the Texans informing many teams, look, we're not trading our young superstar quarterback, which I had from the beginning, by the way. Now, who knows? Maybe they'll change their opinion without JJ Watt to anchor that defense. It seems that there's a lot of media hubbub about the fact that this organization is just completely like tearing itself down. And look, I'm not going to say that it's not true. I couldn't say that I've spoken with anyone in the Texans organization, though I tend to think some of these reports are just kind of prognostication. You know what I mean? But for all intents and purposes, I have no reason to believe that they're lying. I mean, why would you? I get you can get a king's ransom for your superstar quarterback, but you could also just try and facilitate your superstar quarterback staying with the team. You can try and facilitate your superstar quarterback, you know, being the guy who's a Texan forever. And the trade of DeAndre Hopkins was a big botch job, and I get why that would frustrate him, but that's enough for him to be gone? Like, completely? You're just gonna. Okay, well, I guess you didn't really. Like, I'm not saying you need to have loyalty to your company or your organization, because that's really what they are. It's the same as you going to work every day and having loyalty to your boss. But if you had an idiot boss that made a bad decision and then they fired the idiot boss, I tend to think that would make you happy. But I guess not. I get that he wanted the input on the head coaching hire, and they did interview some of the candidates he wanted, but eventually they made the decision they made, and they just didn't hire who he wanted, which I get. Players nowadays want a lot of input. They want to have a lot of say in things, and some of them are afforded that, but I don't know if, as a buyer, look, if you're buying and you're looking for a quarterback, Deshaun Watson's about as good as it gets, yeah? He's young, he's a superstar, right? But you also have to consider, who's to say that we don't make a bad decision eventually that he doesn't like, and then all of a sudden I gotta go get a new quarterback. You know what I mean? That's and as silly as it sounds, that is a realistic possibility. I'm not gonna lie to you. It's possible that you may say, hey, I don't want to pay this tight end this much money. I'm trading this guy. What if Deshaun Watson doesn't like that, and all of a sudden you have to try and get in a situation where you make him happy? You know what I mean? I don't know. I still have Watson on this team come the beginning of next year, but I've been wrong before and I'll be wrong again, so wouldn't shock me. And the final what, obviously, is just what is going on in Houston? You have George Springer gone. You have this is all in the wake of the cheating scandal, by the way, cheating my New York Yankees out of a World Series appearance, at the least, potential title, you never know. You have George Springer gone, James Harden gone, Russell Westbrook gone. Now you have DeAndre Hopkins gone, J.J. Watt gone, potentially Deshaun Watson gone. I've never seen a city's sports climate change so rapidly in such a short period of, we're talking a couple of years here. Like, what's the equivalent? Like, let's think. I mean, take a look at, let's pick a random city that has teams in everything, right? Let's pick Minnesota, right? So this is what, and I don't even know if you can make this argument because Minnesota hasn't. We need to pick a team that's won a title recently. Well, Denver won a title a handful of years ago. So this was Peyton retiring. Okay, then you'd have to have Von Miller getting out of there. He's still there, so you can't have that. You'd have to have somebody like, well, Arenado's gone now, but he's still been there this whole time, so it's a long stretch. Charlie Blackman's still there, you know what I mean? It's weird. I've never seen a city's sports climate or sports base shook to its core this hard. I mean, the Rockets are a completely different team than they were a handful of years ago, obviously. The Astros might not have Carlos Correa at the end of, after the end of this season. Jose Altuve looked like a completely different player in the playoffs last year. Justin Verlander, obviously they lost Garrett Cole as well, by the way. I mean, Justin Verlander having to go through surgery at his advanced age. It's bizarre. It's completely different than anything I've ever seen before. And as much as it pains me to say, because I do feel as though obviously my New York Yankees were cheated by a team that was breaking the rules. I feel for you, Houston sports fan. I do, because I can't imagine. It's I wake up in a year and all of a sudden Aaron Judge is playing for Texas and Saquon Barkley is playing for the Indianapolis. No, it's a bad example. He's playing for the Miami Dolphins. And then, I mean, the Knicks are the Knicks, so we can't even cross that bridge. But I don't know. The Rangers trade someone? I don't know. It's bizarre to me. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Houston. I mean, and you see the posts that really make you chuckle, and it's like, it's January 2020. You're up 24-0 in the divisional round over this hotshot quarterback for the Chiefs. Watson, Hopkins, and Watt are all healthy. You're making a Super Bowl run. Life is good. Yeah, not anymore. Not anymore. Number three in the standout seven, we had to talk about Carson Wentz. So here's the thing about Carson Wentz and the trade. Supposedly, the Bears were hot and heavy on Carson Wentz, and the trade is kind of falling apart. I don't know. And I'm reading an article here on Bleacher Nation, which is a site I have not frequented very often, but I'll give you a free plug because you got a pretty good article in here. The Carson Wentz red flags are piling up, and we just can't ignore them. Pro Football Focus has been flooding Twitter with statistics, and they are not friendly. Most turnover-worthy throws from a clean pocket in 2020. Trubisky had 14, Wentz had 13. Interceptions this season. Under pressure for Carson Wentz, 5. Clean pocket, 10. You know, lowest percentage of accurate passes thrown from a clean pocket the last 3 years. Carson Wentz, 57%. The quarterbacks around him, Cam Newton, 58%, who we'll get to later. Lamar Jackson, 58%, who we've talked about ad nauseum. Jameis Winston, 59%, the interception king. And Mitch Trubisky, 59% as well. Lowest accurate pass percentage on throws beyond the line of scrimmage. Carson Wentz, 45.4%. Mitchell Trubisky, 46.2%. That's only this season, obviously. Most sacks taken this season. Carson Wentz, 50 in 12 games. 12 games. Wentz took sacks on 10.3% of his dropbacks last season. Trubisky took them on just 5.7%. And quite a bit of that has to do with the offensive line play. He's also coming off the worst season of his career easily. 16 touchdowns to 15 interceptions. I mean, his rookie year, he was 16 touchdowns to 14 interceptions. But they won 7 games. He played 16 games that year. So he had more games to throw those interceptions. Also had, obviously, more passing yards at a higher completion percentage. His QBR that year was worse. However, I mean, the team was better, and the kid was a rookie. And I saw flashes when he was a rookie. We discussed it on this show, if you remember. If you weren't here then, it's okay. I'll fill you in. And if you were, thank you. You're a real OG. Against the New York Giants, when he was young, he looked dynamic in terms of athleticism, something that I was not expecting from, you know, this guy that came from a college I had never heard of, and this guy that they were, will he be good enough against the competition? And he looked pretty darn good. And then right after that, he jumped into an 11-2 season. And by the way, the team went on to win, you know, their first Super Bowl ever. Is Carson Wentz worth trading for if you're the Chicago Bears? Yes, he certainly is. Is Carson Wentz an improvement over Mitchell Trubisky? I do believe he is. However, can I guarantee you that Carson Wentz will reach that level of MVP candidate that he once had again? I can't. There's no way I can guarantee you that he will ascend to 30 touchdowns, 7 picks again. However, I would argue this. The 3 years in between his rookie year and this year, his team, you know, didn't have complaints, I would argue. The complaints were with potentially injuries and things of the sort. You have 33 touchdowns, 7 picks, 21 touchdowns, 7 picks, and 27 touchdowns, 7 picks. He's a guy that's always battling some kind of nicked up kind of injury, and that's the main thing I think was kind of the issue. However, I do think you can make the argument that Mitchell Trubisky has been there. He has the relationship with Matt Nagy and some of the guys in this offense. Why not just stick with Mitch? I understand that argument, and I can't really blame you, depending on the price that Philly's asking for. You know, if they're asking for what the Lions got for Matt Stafford, which is, first of all, a replacement quarterback. Second of all, 2 first-rounders and additional. You know what I mean? That's too much for Carson Wentz right now. Carson Wentz's stock is significantly lower, and that's why I think if you're Philly, you have to consider, you know, this is our guy. Can we rebuild our own guy? That's why they went with Sirianni, who has ties to Frank Reich, and a lot of people said, you know, Carson Wentz played better when Frank Reich was around. Obviously, Frank Reich was around when they won the title, so it's an understandable thing to argue. I can actually say it's probably an accurate thing to argue, but we'll see how the season plays out to see if that is in fact the case. I don't know. The interesting thing, as I said, becomes, do you want to sell low? We'll cross sports as we do frequently here, and if you're not a baseball fan, zone out for the next 45 seconds, because it reminds me of the New York Yankees situation with Gary Sanchez. Gary Sanchez came up and as a rookie looked like the best hitting catcher I'd ever seen in my life. The guy tore it up for a handful. He almost won Rookie of the Year in 2.5 months. 2 months, I believe. Somewhere around there. Almost won Rookie of the Year. Didn't play the whole year at all. Loses to Michael Fulmer, and they're both in a weird spot right now in their career. So the thing becomes, all right, what do we do now? Because Gary Sanchez, for those of you who don't follow baseball, is now the worst hitter on the Yankees entirely, to the point where he was benched for the backup catcher, who is also better than him defensively, obviously, as most backup catchers are, and out-hit him. Well, if you're getting out-hit and you're getting outplayed defensively, then you're just getting outplayed, period. You are just the inferior player at this point. But would the team want to cut bait with a homegrown person who they've already seen, you know, a little bit, little shimmers of what he could be, little sparkles in their eyes when they saw those first couple of months and then the next full season? The Eagles have already seen what Carson Wentz could be. Would you want to cut bait on that and know that if Matt Nagy seems to be a pretty well-respected offensive coach for around the league for whatever, you know, I'm not saying he's a bad coach, but most people tend to respect him offensively. You know, how would you feel if in 2 years Carson Wentz is throwing 35 touchdowns to 10 picks again? First year could be a bumpy road, and then the next year he's right back in it. And all of a sudden he's potentially an MVP candidate again. How would you feel in your conference? You might have to face him again. You might watch him lead the Chicago Bears to a title. I think Carson Wentz, when Carson Wentz was, you know, 33 touchdowns to 7 picks, or even 27 touchdowns to 7 picks, Carson Wentz was in that kind of A tier of quarterback. And we'll be doing some tier list shenanigans as, you know, the offseason goes on. We'll discuss that towards the tail end of the show. We've been teasing it forever. But, you know, the way a tier list goes, you have S tier, which is like Tom Brady. S tier is top tier, obviously. Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, and then you could try and argue a couple others, but I'd probably say those are hands down the three best quarterbacks, you know, in football. Brady gets in just on pedigree, I would argue at this point, especially because, you know, he's a Super Bowl champion. You could argue Russell Wilson. You could argue, if you want to, off of the MVP season, you could argue Lamar Jackson. I wouldn't agree with you. You could argue quite a few guys. You could argue Deshaun Watson's there already. I would say no. I would say he's in the A tier. This is the same argument we had years ago with who's an elite quarterback. It's the same thing. It's just an easier way to categorize it. So I would say he was in that lower A tier when he was Carson Wentz. Is he Carson Wentz anymore? Not this year, but I don't know if he still can. I tend to think he can. The fact of the matter is their offensive line did not play very well, and their weaponry was awful. You have Zach Ertz hurt the bulk of the year. You have Nelson Agholor moving on to Vegas to be, you know, a revelation, but he couldn't do that in Philly. You look at it on paper, you have DeSean Jackson, who didn't even get out there, and, you know, I mean, the guy's old. Alshon Jeffrey, the guy's old. You have Arcega Whiteside that, I mean, I've heard many Eagle fans rip to shreds. Jalen Reagor, who, oh, by the way, is not Justin Jefferson. You know what I mean? And that's the thing they're going to have to live with. It's just not there. In terms of talent around him, it's just not there. You take a look at Tom Brady this year compared to last year. Last year, and I stand by what I said, I ripped Brady for the bulk of last season, and then they wind up losing come playoff time. You know, Tom Brady did not have enough around him, and he did not look very good at all. But you put him in Tampa Bay, where it's a little bit more friendly. He's got Rojo, who's a decent back. Leonard Fournette, who's a former Pro Bowler. Antonio Brown, former Pro Bowler. Rob Gronkowski, his buddy and one of the best tight ends of all time. Mike Evans, who's Pro Bowl caliber. And oh, by the way, we've had this discussion. Chris Godwin, who might be the best receiver out of all of them, also on this team and entering his prime. He's not even peaking yet, you know what I mean? He put him in there with Todd Bowles running the defense, with JPP, who's done it, with some good pass rushers. You add in Winfield Jr. in the secondary with some other guys that really, you know, they're gritty. They get it done. Lavonte David, who's been getting it done forever, and Devin White, who's a massive talent on the defensive side. And all of a sudden, you got a Super Bowl contender off the rip, right? And all you really did, and look, it was a couple of these are big, right? You pick up Leonard Fournette for nothing. All you had to do was pay the contract. You get Antonio Brown for nothing. All you had to do was pay the contract. Tom Brady, all you got to do is pay the contract. It's a huge offseason, right? But you look at it in a vacuum, you're signing a guy that's coming off probably one of the worst years he's had in a long time in Tom Brady. Leonard Fournette, who just got thrown away by a team that would go on to win one game. Antonio Brown, who's had many off-the-field issues. Rob Gronkowski, who you don't even know if his heart's in it at the time you go for him. And you're trying to pull it together, you know what I mean? And you're essentially looking at the fact, hey, you know what? Look at what Peyton did in Denver. We could try and do that. And, well, you did. You know what I mean? Right away. Right away you did that. And it's impressive. And how does this tie in? Well, I wonder, would a team like Chicago think we're just a quarterback away? Would I agree with this? No. I tend to think they need to fill out the weaponry on the offense a little bit more as well. But if you put Carson Wentz in there and he plays like the Carson Wentz of old, the Chicago Bears are a contender for that division next year. I mean that genuinely. I still think Green Bay would be the prohibitive favorite and they probably win it, but you could argue you add Carson Wentz, the old Carson Wentz, that team could be immediately the second best team in that division. They'd already be better than Detroit, because Detroit is all likelihood is going to lose Kenny Golladay, and I think with Jared Goff and a new coaching staff, there's going to be some bumps in the road. I like Minnesota, especially as Jefferson enters his second year. But for all intents and purposes, who's to tell me if I were to tell you they'd come in second place and go 9-7 with Carson Wentz, is this shocking? Is this jarring to you? Like, is that surprising at all? No, it's certainly possible. I don't know. I understand it from their perspective. I just wonder what Philly is asking that is making Chicago impatient, or how Chicago thinks their offer is so good that they need to press this to get it done immediately. I don't know. I'd love a little bit more in-depth reporting. I know it's hard, but I'd love a little bit more on this one before I can make a true statement. Next, let's talk about the Russell Wilson issues in Seattle. Russell Wilson, as I said, if he's not in that S tier, he's at the top of the A tier of quarterbacks in the NFL. He was an MVP candidate this year, MVP candidate, I believe, the year before as well. He is one of the better quarterbacks in the league. And supposedly, reportedly, and then it comes out, you know, straightforward, Russell Wilson is, you know, making it apparent he's frustrated that they haven't been able to protect him. He's been sacked almost 400 times in 9 years. And Jason LaCanfora goes, this situation warrants serious monitoring. I don't see him exiting the team, period. I do not see there being any situation, realistically, in my opinion, where Russell Wilson is not wearing a Seattle Seahawks uniform start next season. And I'm much more confident in this one than I am the Deshaun Watson one, because this team, you gotta understand, they're not the same team they are when they won the Super Bowl. And that's kind of obvious, yeah? But the big thing is, when they lost the Super Bowl, they lost because they trusted Russell. They knew, the going forward, Russell's our guy. We're going to let Russell throw it at the 1 yard line, and we're not giving it to Marshawn, we're throwing it. That divided that locker room, it divided the team, it kind of broke down what could have been a dynasty, right? Okay. Well, with all that being said, the people that are still around are the some of the coaches, Pete Carroll, right? Pete Carroll's still around, front office people, and Russell Wilson. So that's the only ties to the best team in their team's history. You know what I mean? And they chose to build around it. Look, I get it. You can't build around the defense forever. You see some of them getting old. Cam Chancellor got a little old. Earl Thomas wanted out. Richard Sherman winds up in San Francisco. And then all these, Bruce Irvin's gone. KJ Wright, you know, all these guys wind up moving on. But it's, and obviously KJ Wright's still there, but I was just naming the players. Bobby Wagner, obviously. But either way, you're talking about, at that point, you'd be rebuilding completely. And when you trade your star quarterback, you always are, right? But if you look at the way that, Detroit is trying to approach it, they're not tearing it down completely. They got Jared Goff. They think they'll still be decent and could even sneak into a wild card spot. Otherwise, why would you get Jared Goff? You know, suppose there was reports that they asked for Aaron Donald. Oh my goodness, you're overvaluing Matthew Stafford. I respect the effort, but no. it's one of those things where we're still going to try and be decent. If you trade Russell Wilson, I don't know what you're getting back. First of all, you're going to get back probably that Herculean price that Houston's looking for. You're needing at least 2 ones, maybe 3 ones, if not more, and maybe a player or two. You know what I mean? Like, how much can you get back to make it worth moving on from Russell Wilson when you could just try and keep him? You know, he just, supposedly he wants more say in the personnel. What he really, I assume, wants is you to put more, you know, of your financial assets into helping his offensive line. Or perhaps trying to scheme better in terms of shoring up the running game, because every year they have injuries to their running backfield. Love Chris Carson, but, well, like Chris Carson, but he's always seems to be nicked up. Whether that means investing in another running back to make a little tandem, whether that be doing this, that, or the third, who knows? But he wants to say because he's tired of getting beat up. You know what I mean? He sees what some of these other quarterbacks have, and he's jealous, and I can't blame him. Because he is one of the best quarterbacks in the league. I would argue he is certainly top five. Like I said, he's not Rodgers, he's not Mahomes, and Brady's in from pedigree, but he's right there. He's right there. I don't think he's going anywhere, but it had to be mentioned. Next, number five in the standout seven, let's talk about Taylor Heinicke. The man, the myth. Taylor Heinicke gets a 2-year, $8.75 million extension from the Washingtons. And I think this is a great deal for all around. Taylor Heinicke might have played the best game of his career ever in any game of football he'll ever play in that playoff game. However, at 2 years, $8.75 million, what do you got to lose? Let him come into training camp and mess around with Alex Smith. You know what I mean? And we talked about it a few weeks ago. If you're Washington, and this is me, and I'd still stand by this, even with Heinicke on the roster, the best thing you could do is probably improve that quarterback position. But if you like Heinicke and you want to give him a go for next year, and Rivera likes him, obviously much more than he liked Dwayne Haskins, then go get a number two receiver to be behind Scary Terry. You know, you like what you have in Logan Thomas, the tight end? Okay, fair enough. Your running back tandem is all right. Okay, let him roll. Invest in the O-line a little bit, get a number two receiver, invest in the defense, get someone to go opposite Chase Young that people are actually scared of, because at this point, you know, I guess Ryan Kerrigan isn't really invoking fear in people at this point in his career. Not to say Ryan Kerrigan is completely washed, but, you know, 5.5 sacks, meh, you know, it is what it is. That playoff game against Tampa Bay definitely warranted an extension. I'm glad to see that he's gotten one. I don't think he's the de facto starter going in. I don't think Ron would do that. I think Ron's smarter than that. He's a good football coach, and he knows, you know, that's just not going to happen. So either way, good for Taylor Heinicke. However, and if you haven't listened to the other episode, I recommend going back and listening to the trade I floated. The idea I floated, even though I've said over and over, I don't think Deshaun Watson moves, the deal that I could see happening, now riddle me this, I could see potentially a team, and this is a big one, a team like the Atlanta Falcons saying, look at what they got for Matt Stafford. We have a guy in Matt Ryan who's been to the Super Bowl, who's won MVP. Let's trade Matt Ryan to the Washingtons. And let's say they get, you know, they got 2 ones and a quarterback. So let's float something random. Let's say they get 2 ones and 3 twos, you know what I mean? And they might get more, they might get less. You know, when you take a look at Matt Stafford, obviously, he's coming in at 33 years old as of this week, you know? Matt Ryan, on the other hand, sitting at 35, maybe they don't get as much. Maybe they just get one number one and 3 twos. Maybe it's just 2 number ones and nothing else. So my theory is, then you turn around and you say, hey, how's it going, guys? What I'm thinking is, Mr. Houston Texans GM, you know, you're just first day, you know, first day on the office, first day, you've been around a little while, Nick Caserio, you know, but we'll make it easy for you. You just got rid of J.J. Watt. You didn't want to have a public spat with your superstar from your franchise. I get it. You already have a spat with the other one. I'll take him off your hands. Don't worry, buddy. I'm going to give you these two number ones that I just got from the Washingtons. And look, and you put your hand over your mouth. Look, buddy, you think they're really going to be good? They don't even have, first of all, they don't even have a freaking name. Second of all, you know, they were going to go with a guy named Heineken before we traded him our guy. Third of all, our guy's getting old. Have you seen it? We're not winning games down here. So what we're going to do, here you go. I got you. Don't worry about it, buddy. I'm going to give you their two number ones, right? One of them might be middle of the first round. One of them might be low in the first round. You know what I mean? We think Matt's taking a step back, right? We'll do that. We're going to trade you number four in the first round. Number four, so you could take whatever quarterback you want in this draft, right? And I say whatever quarterback, but obviously you're not getting Trevor Lawrence unless you know. So I'll make a deal with you. Don't worry about it. So we're going to give you number four. And, you know, if you want something, we might give you another pick if you want it. Take all these number ones because you know what? We didn't even have these. We traded Matt Ryan for these picks, but we haven't even made a plan for him yet. Don't worry about it. We'll give you their two number ones, our number one, and we'll give you a couple of twos maybe. All right, and you give us Deshaun Watson. And all of a sudden, the Washington football team is happy because they're like, look, we have Matt Ryan. We're a legitimate contender in the NFC East. The Houston Texans just got rid of their big headache, and they got a massive haul in draft picks. You could infuse your team with as much young talent as you want. And look, you know, if Deshaun was mad off of one bad year, he's going to be even more mad when you don't make the playoffs next year, potentially. And even more mad. No. Get a young kid in there. Let him develop. Do your thing. Is it Bryce Wilson? Who are you interested in? Zach Wilson, excuse me. Bryce Wilson. Is it Zach Wilson? Is it Fields? Who's going to slip? Who are you interested in? Maybe you don't want that third guy. Maybe you don't want the third quarterback in this draft. Maybe you trade down again, and you all of a sudden got five first-round draft picks. You know, you could get his pick of the litter. Fill out your team. You want a good D-end. You want Kyle Pitts. You want a star receiver in Devontae Smith. You want this. You want that. Do whatever you want. Who knows who the star QB is going to be coming out next year? But you've got your pick of the litter. And then if you're an Atlanta Falcons fan, or if you're the organization, you're thinking, huh, so we just turned our 35-year-old quarterback who couldn't get us over the hill into a guy who's going to start the season and be turning 26. He's already on this contract. We don't have to do that. We put him with Julio Jones, who many would say he's definitely still got it. You know what I mean? He may not be... I don't know if I want to have that argument, but he's in that conversation for DeAndre Hopkins' kind of talent right now. Obviously, in his prime, I think he's better than DeAndre, I think, in terms of athleticism and such, but he's still one of the top receivers in the NFL. Oh, by the way, you know, maybe we go out and make a signing. Maybe we sign a big number two. We bring back Todd Gurley. We like what we had in him, you know? Maybe all of a sudden, the Atlanta Falcons, with Drew Brees getting out of there, Tom Brady getting a year older, who knows? Maybe the Atlanta Falcons are the number two team in their division. Maybe they're pushing to try and beat Tampa Bay, because we saw Tampa Bay wasn't that great in the regular season. It took them a while to get going. I think next year they'll be better, since they've got a year under their belt together and a little bit more chemistry. But you never know. Maybe Tampa Bay goes 11-5 again, because they don't take the regular season as seriously. Maybe you find a way to steal that division with Deshaun Watson. Maybe you reinvigorate that fan base who's been tired of getting made fun of for all these years. You know what I mean? All of a sudden, you have a QB, and look, Matt never won the big game. You have a QB who won the big game in college, right? You got a guy, where's Clemson University located? South Carolina is not necessarily the furthest, you know what I mean? I don't know. Just saying, I know this trade will never happen, and it's not even close to like being discussed. But I will keep floating it. I will keep floating it until it happens. I promise you. So all that to say, congrats to Taylor Heineke. Number six in the standout seven. This might be the last one. Seven will be a wrap up kind of thing. We'll go through the notes. Number six. Just a note on Cam Newton here, and I know it seems kind of random. Rodney Harrison, former Patriot, said outright, you know, Cam just can't play quarterback in the NFL. And that's like, wow, okay. That's a doozy of a comment to drop. I mean, first of all, I mean, the guy's had a career. Obviously, he can play QB in the NFL. At least he could at one point. I guess his point being he can't do it anymore. I don't know. I didn't watch every snap of Patriots football this year. I'm not going to lie to you one bit. That's not what we do here. But 7-8 record, 65% completion percentage out of Cam is actually like the second best in his career. Obviously, the passing yards not there. 8 touchdowns to 10 picks. The weaponry, still pretty bad. It's the same weaponry that Brady had. It wasn't very good. They didn't improve much around him. It seemed like the game plan was almost from McDaniels, well, you know, we're going to use Cam's athleticism and try and fill in some of the gaps. And, you know, Cam runs for 592 yards this season, the most since 2017. But, you know, he runs for 12 touchdowns. So if you want to be that guy, he really had 20 total touchdowns to 10 picks. But I don't think Cam was especially bad. Lowest QBR of his career compared to last year, obviously. Last year he only played 2 games. But it's a 47, you know, it's about average. I think Cam Newton could easily be decent. Like, look at it this way. If the Chicago Bears trade with Philly falls through, and all of a sudden they're on the market and they're not getting anywhere with that, they're not getting anywhere with Deshaun Watson, they're not getting anywhere moving up in the draft, they don't like the young QBs, could they sign Cam Newton and improve? You could make the argument that it would be an improvement over Mitch. I'm not trying to be a hater on Mitch, but I don't think Mitch is anything necessarily special per se. I don't know. I could see Cam Newton still being an NFL quarterback. I think he's certainly good enough to be a backup, and I do think he is good enough to contend for some starting positions in the NFL. I think that's an overreaction from a guy who was expecting a lot more out of a former MVP who's quarterbacking, you know, his old team. I do think it's a stretch, personally. Number 7, as we said, we're going to run through and just go through some news and notes. Mike Evans has supposedly offered to take a pay cut to keep the Tampa Bay Buccaneers squad together. You know, it feels like there's never anything bad that comes out of Mike Evans, other than some offensive pass interferences, which is interesting, because they were ticky-tacking it in the Super Bowl, but none on Mike. Good on Mike. The champion, one of the best receivers in the NFL, trying to keep his boys together. I respect it a lot. Pat Mahomes, after the Super Bowl, reportedly said there was 5 minutes of just quiet before he turned to the locker room, and the mood kind of went to, we're going to get back here. Next year's going to be a revenge tour, I guess. Aaron Jones on his impending free agency. I mean, Green Bay. I've been there for 4 years, and they're the team that drafted me. I'd love to stay, but however it works out. It's in God's hands. Okay. Arian Foster on if he would play football, it knowing what it has done to his health. If I had to do it again, I wouldn't have played football, not even close. Arian also reportedly said that his collarbone is still broken from when he hurt it a decade ago. Yikes. An interesting conversation being had. I saw this on a page. When Cam Newton was sacked 7 times and under pressure in the Super Bowl, he choked and was the reason they lost. When Mahomes had the same issues and put up the same bad stats, it wasn't his fault. I never ripped Cam Newton for being under pressure, and we weren't even, I believe, on the air back then, but I never ripped Cam Newton for being under pressure. I ripped Cam Newton for not diving on a fumble. That's it. That's the only thing I ripped Cam Newton for. Cam Newton at his peak was a darn good player. I just ripped him for not diving on the ball. You know what I mean? And somebody saying, well, it's the same thing with Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, and certain people get certain passes. That's life. I hate to break it to you, but the fact of the matter is that's the way life works. Some people are afforded other breaks that others aren't. I mean, you know, I'm not even trying to be that guy that look at what happens with the refs. But no, literally, like, look at some of the things that are said about some quarterbacks in the league. They're chokers. They're this, they're that. I mean, people ripped Peyton Manning relentlessly because they always compared him to Tom Brady, not realizing Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time. That's just the way. Oh, you're not as good as the GOAT? Yeah, I'm not. He's the greatest quarterback of all time. It's like, how is that a fair comparison? You know what I mean? That's like saying, oh, David Wright, you didn't do as much for your team. You're not Derek Jeter. Yeah, he's Derek Jeter. Like that, you can't. And it's one of those things that time provides context to, yeah? But look, Cam Newton's had a, and look, we were just talking about him. Cam Newton has had a solid NFL career. Is he a Hall of Famer? No, not by any stretch of the imagination. But Cam Newton is the all-time leader in rushing touchdowns by a quarterback. He's one of the best mobile quarterbacks in the history of football. I mean, you take a look, his time in Carolina, before the year where he plays two games, he runs for 700, 741, 585, 539, 636, 754. Like, the guy was dynamic. Was he the best passer of all time? No, of course not, and I wouldn't argue that. And I would think that the 15, it's pretty obvious to people, at least it should be, the 15 in one year where he throws 35 touchdowns is a blip. It is as a blip you can get on a radar. It is easily the best he will ever play at the quarterback position. He'll never get to that level again in all likelihood. I mean, look at their receiving core that year. Greg Olsen leads the team in catches at 77 for 1,100. Their second leading receiver is Ted Ginn. And then Jericho Cotchery, then Philly Brown, Corey Funchess at 21 years old. I mean, like, come on now. He threw 35 touchdowns to those guys? You know what I mean? And then you add in the fact that that's the year that he ran for 10 touchdowns. I mean, the guy played out of his mind. You know? It's just kind of one of those things where context is king, right? And people need to realize just because you're not the greatest of all time doesn't mean you're not good. Doesn't mean you're bad in the slightest. Matter of fact, that's just kind of life. There's only one person that could be the greatest of all time. There's only a handful of people that could be in that argument at all, in that debate. You know, it's just the way it is. It's sad, but it's true. Sorry. Keeping on here. LeSean McCoy played zero snaps in the Super Bowl, just like last year. He now has two championship rings. Another one that we didn't mention in here, the Pouncey brothers issued their joint retirement. The two combined for 13 Pro Bowls over the years, and it gives new context. We talked about it when the Steelers were eliminated. The video of Marquise Pouncey talking with Big Ben and Big Ben sounding like he's choked up. I tried to win it for you, brother. I really did. And we were speculating as to what that necessarily meant back then, but I mean, he knew. He knew that Pouncey was going to wrap it up and, you know, touching a solid career from the Pouncey boys. Something that, you know, we don't see. We talked about it before, playing with your brother, with the Watt brothers. You know, we haven't really seen much of this from the same family. There's only a handful of them. There's a reason you know the Pouncey name. There's a reason you know the Manning name. There's a reason you know the Watt name. Additionally, just to wrap up once again on the Super Bowl, Tom Brady can have a minor surgical procedure on his knee this offseason. Said it bothered him most of the year, but it's minor. So good on Tom playing through it. Gutting it out. Joe Barry, formerly of the Rams, will be the Green Bay Packers' new defensive coordinator. And of course, just wanted to end off on a somber note. Well, not of course on a somber note, but we had to mention it. Rest in peace to Marty Schottenheimer, NFL great, around for quite some time in the league. Obviously, people probably remember him best from his time with the, at least I do, his time with the Los Angeles, not Los Angeles then, but his time with the then San Diego Chargers. He was a great coach, just couldn't get over the edge in the NFL. He goes to Canada and he wins, I believe, multiple Grey Cups. I mean, the guy did a damn good job. You take a look, his last year in San Diego, they go 14-2. If I remember correctly, this is the year that Philip Rivers discussed, where he talked about playing with the torn ACL in the championship game. Yeah, this is the... Oh, excuse me, they lost in the divisional in this one. But this is, I believe... No, it must have been another year then. But darn good coach. Coached some darn good teams as well. This is the year LT had 28 touchdowns. Phil Rivers at 25 years old, 22 touchdowns to 9 picks. And he never coached another game in the NFL, and I will never know why. Rest in peace to Marty, and I wish nothing but the best to his family. Obviously, his son, who was coaching in the NFL, and he'll wind up with another job in the league as well. Highly respected. He's got a coaching tree to him, and as I said, wish his family nothing but the best. That'll bring us to the end of this week's episode, episode number 102 of the Necessary Roughness Podcast, presented by Last Word on Sports. So this is the part where I normally say join us again next Saturday, but that is not gonna be the case this week because we are going to our off-season schedule. Off-season schedule, we do an episode once a month. Usually we try and plan around the NFL dates for that month, you know what I mean? That month, I should say, excuse me. But we try to plan it around, like, the draft and free agency and things like that. So the only date listed per operations.nfl here for March is the deadline for eligible college football players to inform that they are going to forego the draft and return to college. That is the date listed here. We'll take a look around. We're trying to pick a day in March that's kind of best for everybody. You know, we have free agency and the league year starts 2021. Free agency, the 3 days before free agency begins, March 15th to the 17th. So I think we're going to be targeting, it may not be 100%, but as of now, we are targeting March the 20th. We'll do the 13th, so we can do a preview of free agency. We'll do March the 13th. Scratch what I said. Set your calendar for March the 13th for our next episode, and we will see you then. Excited for the offseason, excited to have had another season under our belts. If you were around, this was your first season or your first episode or your third or fourth one, thank you for being here, and we hope that you'll join us throughout the offseason and then into the regular season next year. Always great having you around. As always, I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic, signing off.